Hello, 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 Pish Shrugs, and a very warm welcome to you. This is our first ever interview episode, and our first ever guest is self-proclaimed druid and definite artist Ronan O'Rahlig, hailing from Kildare. Me and Ronan had a great conversation. We were originally meant to make our episode about the oak, but I wanted to get an insight into the man himself. So this episode, we talk about his journey becoming a druid, how he came to this sort of realization. This is something he wanted to do. We talk about the use of Baurons in conjuring visions to assist his artwork. And then we just dive into surreal art and the work of Francis Bacon, as well as just taking a look at why maybe Celtic art is underrepresented or understudied. I'll let the pudding speak for itself, as the saying goes. Enjoy!
Hello, and welcome to the Pish Rogues podcast.
Peddlers of Irish myth, folklore, and superstition.
Ooh, boy.
Let's jump in. Hello, you heard that intro. Welcome to the Pish Rogues podcast. This time, not with Aaron and Luke. It's just with Luke. As you've heard, Aaron is off chopping down trees in the Amazon, making the world a better place, making more toothpicks. What suitable of an episode to do to commemorate Aaron, but an episode on a tree and the father of all trees, the oak. And I couldn't do it on my own. This is our first interview podcast, and the person, the subject of today's interview, is a good friend of ours. You've seen us share it. A Pish Rogues friend, I'd go as far as to say. And his name is Ronan O'Rahlig. Hello, Ronan.
Hello, Luke.
Formerly Ronan O'Reilly, or would that be dead naming you to say that name?
No, I am officially still Ronan O'Reilly.
That's good to know. But
the government knows me as Ronan O'Reilly.
But would you say at this point, would more of your mates, etc., know yourself as Ronan O'Reilly now, or would that be the stage name, the prince name?
Still kind of a stage name. Because it slips. People slip, you know.
And you can't. I think you'll be taken more seriously when you're chill on that, I suppose, rather than being like, come on, guys.
Yeah, well, I actually have a few friends who always called me Ronan. Without ever being asked. That's just how you
should do. I have said Ronan? Give me the proper one.
Now, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world.
No, that's fair. To give better context to this, the first time, I don't think, I was aware of your art beforehand too, but I didn't get the full context of it. You, to rewind and be frank, one of the first images, and it was captivating to see, was the first thing I saw of yours was a video of you doing the sort of Baron beat. And me and you had a great conversation on, because you might remember, guys, the Banfast episode, where we discussed how the wise women usually had some sort of object, I don't know what you'd call it even, to assist their vision, I suppose, whether it be Biddy Early had a blue bottle she looked into, but a lot of the more normal thing was beating a baron.
Yeah.
And you, when did you see or come to the conclusion or decide or try upon using the baron before you did your sort of druidic art?
Well, the baron with the art is a recent thing.
Cool.
And even the baron I have, that was an old one that someone gave my dad as a present, and it was lying in our house for ages.
Mm.
And I just did it up over lockdown.
Really?
There was two crossbars at the back that were long gone.
Right. So crossbars, you made them out of gas.
Yeah, well, I went down the canal and got two pieces of ash in the back. But the whole thing started because it wasn't actually druidry, it was more like general shamanism, which is a bit of an iffy topic, but
I'll just, before we go into our topic on the oak, I was very interested in your sort of reclamation of the title of druid culturally, and I have a few questions about it, but I'll let you speak first.
I'll tell you the story.
Please.
Well, I was always interested in shamanism or animism or any type of ancient religion that uses spirit world in some way, or animal symbolism, or
animism would imply that it's sort of a religion that would worship,
the worship of nature in some sense, like
Native Americans with the coyote or the whatever.
But it's a worldwide thing. Like, if you look at any ancient religion anywhere, more than likely they have water or the sun or trees or animals as sacred.
Yeah.
Usually the opposite of Christianity, in the sense that in Christianity usually humans are seen as separate to the animal kingdom.
Which is bizarre, isn't it, man? Even using the term in modern senses, maybe we're coming out of it, the word animalistic, you know, is or savage, if you get me.
Whereas, we're going to get into lots of savagery.
There's a great acceptance. There was a great video I saw of a Native American saying, well, the idea of Native American philosophy, he said, is that, he was like, your philosophy, and you're speaking just to a Western idea, is that man is inherently good. And he said, Native Americans don't believe man, even ourselves, are inherently good. He was like, we are inherently aware of the capacity for evil, as in the human. And there was like, that's, it's more so, I think the problem with a lot of, we could get into this later, but the problem with a lot of modern faith
we'll just dive into the politics.
We can, I think Ronan will just accept that this is going to shoot all over. And if we chat about an oak, fair play to us. But no, it's just wild to consider how these, the biggest thing I've found in this podcast, and even from looking at yourself and stuff, is this, I think we appreciate the basedness of older thinking of, you know, winter and summer, you know, life and death, good, evil. It's not separated with a fault line. They're connected.
Most Celtic thought or Celtic philosophy is based around, as you know, the number three. So it's usually not a dual world between one and the other. Light and dark, there's always a third section. So like, you know, Twilight is a bit of a cliche, you know, like the Celtic Twilight. But that's what the Druids are into, you know, the midpoint. And like, well, Celtic religion is later than what I was talking about, animism. But like, you can see there aren't really any good or evil gods in a sense. Well, there might be, but like someone like Lu, who's meant to be, usually people think of him as almost like a Jesus figure, you know, the son, like
Link from Legend of Zelda vibes.
But like the stories of him, like killing people for nothing really, and like taking great revenge.
Did you forget about that? And like, Cúchulainn was a big, like, only that's even later kind of. But, yeah, you know what I mean. Like a big hothead. He was definitely a jock, like, you know. Not in the worst way, but
he was a fiery teenager.
Yeah, exactly. But
yeah. Anyway, so the shamanism thing, I think, like, basically went to a festival.
That's the most great thing to start.
It was called Spirit of Folk. It was in Loud. I think it's called Dunderry Park. And it was just like an Irish folk festival, but there's a lad there who does like a kind of shamanism course. And he, like, it was a music festival, but there were lots of classes that you could go to. And one of them was shamanic drumming. So basically he had everyone in this tent, and we all lay down on the ground on our backs, and he kind of talked us through it. Like, he was coming at it from a very broad sense point of view. Like, he didn't talk about Celtic, or he didn't mention those words. He was only talking about shamanism. But he said, look, like, there's a method to this, and one of the methods you can follow is that I'm going to play a drum at a certain beat. It's between 4 and 7 beats per second. And whatever it is that does, it puts your brain into a certain state of mind. And, well, like, the idea of the shaman, or maybe the druid, is that through trance, through a drum, they go to the spirit world, or they go somewhere in their brain and bring back information that wouldn't have been available to them just in their normal waking consciousness. So basically, yeah, he just played the drum, and he told us that we had to imagine ourselves in somewhere in nature, like a forest. The idea is to go down through a hole. So that's symbolically you're going into the other world, or into the spirit world.
And even the fact that you know, you make yourself present in nature, even in your imagination, that's quite an interesting starting point, isn't it? And like, you know, giving yourself up to that. That's good. And did you, was it resonant for you at that moment, or was it a slow burn that you're like, I want
to get more into this? It was a bit of a slow burn because, like, it was a bit new agey. It was like, you know, you're going to go down this hole and you're going to meet your spirit animal.
Is like, Harry Potter, well, like, well, no, like, joking. Well,
what's find your Patronus.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was like, how am I supposed to know what my spirit animal is, or how am I supposed to know if I meet an animal, is that it?
Yeah.
And the person I was with was actually getting kind of frustrated.
Really? Yeah.
Like, I don't know what my spirit animal is. So, yeah, in that sense, it was a slow burner, but I don't know. Something about it stuck with me.
Did you meet an animal? It was some like a rat.
No, I'm joking. No, I'm joking. Some annoying a cockroach.
No. There's fleas everywhere.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I do have it written down, actually. I should have checked. I think I met a few, though.
Big stag energy.
Deer. Yeah,
I was about to say.
That was a deer. But see, the thing about it is, like, I think a lot of the time you're projecting stuff.
That's the problem, too. What is a pure thought, and what is you being like, I want to be a shark.
Yeah,
I need to be a shark. Yeah. Yes, I am.
I met killer whales and wolves.
Yeah, exactly.
But my first name means little seal. Like, straight away, I'm thinking, well, like, maybe I'll meet a seal. So I think I did. But, you know, maybe I was just...
Yeah, that's half the battle, though, and maybe that's why you were named. Like, that's the... It's,
well, yeah, maybe.
So many of these things, and maybe it's best not to question it, of when one delves into their own mind, whether it be, and I'm not, you know, whether it be a trance or, you know, meditation or psychedelia, like we've spoken, the same thing you said of, you know, I don't know if we went into it on the band Fiasa chat, but we have to, whether we like it or lump it, we have to accept that in past society, you know, whether it was by the drum and getting the chance, and as you say, go into another realm and bringing back info, or, you know, it's registered that druids, you know, that the original, like the people of the whatever village, tribe, whatever it may be, were allowed to eat the grey cap mushroom, and they'd eventually get some sort of psychedelic trip. But then the druids were going up to the woodland, so that means they were having a fly of Garrick, the sort of one you see in all the fairy sort of memorabilia, you know, the red with the white top or whatever.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, to the outsider looking in, the people in the village, I came to the druid with some problem. He thinks on it, and he's thinking on it on his walk up to this hill, and we just see him go up to a woods for 3 days. But really, you know, he's munching. I'm not sure if he was open to them about, like, I was munching on these mushrooms. And then the fact, allegedly, they would. Yeah, exactly.
I actually did come across a book where someone got people to do mushrooms and got them to draw the visions they saw.
Yeah.
And then they compared them to the likes of Loch Crew and Newgrange.
That's such a good idea. Did it work, or were they drawn, I don't know, Harley Quinn or something? Something peculiar.
They all drew their favourite X-Men.
Yeah.
I think some of it was, like, a lot of them drew, you know, circles or diamond shapes or swirls and stuff like that. But,
yeah, man.
No, it's hard to tell because, like, we've all seen them for...
That's the thing. And if you...
So, after the festival, I let go of that because that was holding me back with it.
Yeah.
So I kind of had this, like, secret life of doing this. I found a drum recording. It was like a 15-minute one. And I used to do it at home. And I used to lie down and do these journeys. And I had a little journal. Mm. But I never told anyone about it.
Fair.
I don't know, I was a bit embarrassed about it.
I
thought
I get
everyone
that.
Would think it was a bit mad. Like,
it's just something you're doing, like, as in, it's no harm.
Yeah, but I think, well, I kind of just, over a few months, just figured it out kind of as I went along. Like, I had to stop worrying about a spirit animal or whatever. Like, that was just a load of shite, like.
Yeah.
For me, it was.
Like, so you're not escaping your mind then, you're trapped in it, kind of.
No, I was getting too caught up on stuff like that. And now I don't. I would just, animals always show up, but I wouldn't consider one more important than the other. Or, you know, I have a certain range of animals that I am more attracted to than others, and they pop up in my artwork all the time.
Mm.
Lunasa 2021. I'm in a forest
lit by golden sunlight. I'm in a glade, and there's a wild golden raven there. I'm sitting meditating across from a wolf. He turns me slowly into a wolf man, and there's fire coming from my mouth. And there's flowers growing around me. Then Lou arrives as a golden shining man with turquoise eyes, and Talchu is there as well as a golden woman. Lou gives me his spear and I throw it into a great oak tree, and when it hits the tree, life spreads through it. It blooms acorns and every kind of fruit, and honey pours out of the hole. The wolf and other animals and me and Lou and Talchu all drink the honey from the tree. Then we gather some of it up in cauldrons and we bring it to my grove. Dagda, Cairnunas, Bridget, Morrigan are all there and they're happy to see us. The Dagda has a cauldron steaming away, but he says it's not ready yet and there's some more stuff to collect. I put all the stuff I gathered into it, and there's a beautiful substance inside, brewing already, to be drank later.
But anyway, so it kind of, I had this journal and it was in my room, and then I kind of stopped. I turned into like a fully fledged atheist.
In every regard.
Yeah. Went like, I took off all my jewelry, I have a Taurus hammer here. Like, oh, actually, no, this is before that.
I
had a load of little, like, Celtic knots and stuff like that.
Yeah, so you were going atheist, and it wasn't just against, let's say, Christendom or any of that.
It was pure faith.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was like some sort of believer in science only or something like that.
Yeah, fair. I think we all have to do that and then edge. It's like you have to do that and then edge a little bit back.
Yeah, there is a common journey that everyone does.
Yeah. It's
they get out of Christianity, become an atheist, become a Buddhist,
and then they say, "Do you know what? I just don't know." And it's a bit of crack, isn't it? Like that seems to be the.
I didn't become a Buddhist, but I did take.
Thank
off,
God. No, I'm joking.
I did take off all my jewelry and all.
Yeah.
And I was considering getting my Celtic tattoos removed at one point and everything.
Oh Lord.
Yeah, I know.
Was there anything, should I ask, was there just something where you're just like,
I don't know this? It was a weird time, but I don't know, there was nothing in particular. It was just a bit of a,
I think, spiritual
crisis, let's say.
You just question everything you're doing, and then you're like, Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the hills that you've not died on but stood on, and you're like,
yeah,
let me kick these down. But that's good. And what got you back into it? Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Well, I was in Canada at the time. I was in Toronto. And yeah, I only wore, it's kind of stupid thinking back on it, but I only wore plain t-shirts.
Yeah.
Took out all my jewelry. I was like, I wanted to live this minimal life or something.
Fair, very fetish.
Yeah.
but not like the Viking way. Like,
no.
But yeah.
The
less IKEA way.
Game where I walk in IKEA poster. I don't know. I think like over time I just chilled out a bit.
And fair.
In Toronto, obviously, there's a lot of different cultural backgrounds and meeting a lot of different people, and I started to get more interested in the First Nations over there. And
it was very interesting given the news around there. Wasn't there a lot of First Nation bodies dug up in Christian
see the churches building. Being burned?
Yeah. It was wild, man.
Do you know about the black metal church burns in the 80s and 90s?
No, please. Let's do this.
Go off on a tangent.
Get ready
here.
For the tangent. Well, this is our 2-minute tangent on the
short.
Black metal.
Basically, in Norway and other parts of Scandinavia, you had a movement called black metal, which is very heavily influenced by Norse paganism. They're all mad about Odin and all this kind of stuff.
Damn.
And they saw Christianity as a colonial force in Scandinavia, so they went around burning churches.
Damn.
Yeah, if you're interested in it, go look up black metal church burnings. There's a whole school of thought around it called black metal theory.
Jesus, that's so cool, though.
But they're a bit more...
And were they stamped down, or were people pretty like, all right,
well, a lot of them were actually murderers and psychopaths and racists.
Ah, so, that, it's in a terrible, yeah.
Yeah, it was very dodgy scene.
Hard to condone.
It was a bit...
And what was, would you say, or once again, was it a slow build where you said, you know what, I'm going to dip back into this old...
No, I went all out all of a sudden. I went out,
great.
And I
went out
with a friend of mine, and I bought this Mjolnir Thor's hammer just on a whim.
Damn.
Put back in all my earrings, and
never looked back.
Yeah, it was
did it feel good? Did it feel better than when you were an atheist, pure and through? Or was it more much of a...
Well, now, just...
I
even though I'm very into Celtic
spirituality
and myth, I don't know what I believe, and I don't care.
I think there's room for not to find... I would be from the same camp of, you know, I sit here and I'm interested in all of this, but I don't like to throw my flag down.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you, if you do a drum journey or any sort of trance, if you start doubting its reality, it's not going to work.
So that's the thing.
You have to give yourself up to it.
Yeah,
to some extent.
I'll never meet my little otter friend unless I give myself up.
Yeah, you have to let go. But that was that. I came back to Ireland and I was making art as usual. And I was always interested in surrealism in the 1930s, where artists all of a sudden it was all inspired by Sigmund Freud. His theories about the unconscious, and all of a sudden that opened up a new method of working for artists in general. You know, they were all trying to find ways to tap into the unconscious brain somehow while making artwork, which is what artists have been doing anyway for centuries. But
they put a thought process surrounding it.
They based their whole practice on trying to channel the unconscious somehow. So there's a lot of different methods for that. So. One is automatism, where you just draw without trying to use your conscious brain at all, like almost like a doodle, and you can do it in writing as well.
I do that with me. I do a little bit of art on the side, and I have to find whenever I'm doing art, it's a big thing of a lot of my friends from illustration backgrounds are like, you have to plan your piece, you have to plan your... And a lot of bad stuff comes out of not planning.
Yeah.
But I find when you get it right and you haven't planned, the sort of...
Yeah, it's difficult.
The thing it says about you, about yourself, like, Jesus, that's weird.
It's difficult. I actually was studying a lot in my bachelor's, or on my bachelor's thesis on the unconscious and the artist Francis Bacon. Because I said surrealism, but it goes all through the last 100 years, like from the surrealist to abstract painters to a movement called abstract expressionism, where they're just... They're trying to be as raw as possible without, but as little thought as possible, just making raw.
Pure, it's expression.
Yeah. And then I was looking at Francis Bacon, who I think he's a good example of a marriage between logic and instinct, you know, like, because his backgrounds are quite, like, they're quite planned and meticulous. But then when he paints a figure, he would try and get into this state where he's just.
Yeah.
But he was very into the whole idea of being an animal. Like, if you ever look at his books, like he had all these books of different wild animals. He would use them for references for painting his people.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he's a funny character because he's not really like a shamanic kind of person. He's a very cosmopolitan Londoner. Like,
you're not wrong. I always think of, well, it's because of his obsession. Right? I just think of Butcher Boy when I think of him.
Actually, this is another tangent, but I've been told that... he was brought up in Kildare. Which is where I'm from. And seemingly, his whole butcher thing came because he used to cycle past the butcher shops in Nace and Salins.
That's
our contribution to the art world.
That's amazing. Good. Thanks so much, Nace and Salins, for all that.
You go. You're welcome. So I was always making artwork, trying to channel the unconscious, and there's loads of different problems with it. Like, it's really, there's kind of a story, I don't know how true it is, but there's a story that Dali sent his paintings to Freud, and Freud said, I actually just see the conscious in your paintings, you know.
That's
like, it was too contrived.
I would go as far as to say with him, it is very thought out, not thinking, you know what I mean?
Well,
it's very hard to
I
not think
methods,
but...
and I think one method another method is to actually have a vision. Yeah. And that could be from a dream, or when you're in a fever, or on the magic mushrooms, and then to remember it and then paint it in full consciousness. So there is an example of like a marriage between the two. It's an image that could only come from your unconscious.
But do you know what's a great quote? I saw that it'll come into the problem of that. Even when I find, you know, once you try and recall a dream or something, you're already, you know what I mean? Your brain is already Tetrising and plotting, you know what I mean? It's making it more formal so that someone else can describe it. But I saw that great quote of Beckett's there. Words are the clothes thoughts wear.
Words are the clothes thoughts wear.
And just sort of the dissonance between, you know what I mean? Of like even how clothes work. Because there's a lag between your... Yeah, because
your brain activity and what actually is produced,
what comes out of you, and you can't. Yeah, it's not like Avatar where you can both get the tail things and connect them to each other. You know, human expression. There's a little bit of meeting in the middle there, based on the whatever, whether it's art or word or whatever.
I enter my grove with my animals. There's a big cauldron in the middle of it with a fire underneath, and that's where the light's coming from, and it's quiet. All the deities are there around the cauldron. There's some strange ones that I don't recognize. The Dagda greets me, and he's the one who has prepared it, and he tells me to thank each animal and deity individually. After I've done that, it's time to drink from the cauldron. I go to it, and it's full of a steamy, honey-like syrup. Dagda breaks a horn off his own head for me to use to drink with. Everyone has a drinking horn, great gold ones. We all gather around the cauldron, and at the same time we dip our drinking horns in and drain the cauldron and drink. When I drink, there's a psychedelic feeling. There's a sense of a huge party that goes on for hours, but it only feels like a few seconds. There's music and celebration and drumming and dancing. And there's trees and flowers all blossoming from the grove. After this, I realise that a magic oak seed has been planted in all of our stomachs, and I laugh. There's a feeling that we're all blessed and there's an important job to do.
I had a question as well, just in case. Did your man mention why, or did you look into then why the 4-7 beat sort of time, why that's so resonant with people? The sort of
not really, because you just end up on these weird YouTube rabbit holes of like the science of
the pseudo
shamanic drums, and I don't know how true it is. And for me,
the less the better.
For me, I don't care. I don't need something to be confirmed by science. If I'm lying down and someone's playing the drum and I'm going into a trance, and that's enough.
Well, man, that's me.
It's like when people say, like, scientists confirm that walking is good for you.
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah.
We already knew that.
That's my thing is of, you know, the big thing that started me to start this podcast of, if my fucking ward fell off because of a 5-cent coin, I don't really want to know the ins and outs of it. Did I tell you about the cures thing?
I heard it on your podcast. Yeah. I told someone else recently about it, and they were like,
"That's not true or whatever." I can 100% without doubt say, lads, I had a lot of thinking to do after it happened, because I didn't even fully, you know what I mean? It happened to me and I didn't fully accept it. Do you know what I mean? As in, I didn't fully say, "All right, yeah, this is going to fall off." You know what I mean? And it did. So I think so much of it is, I think it's very clever. It taught me a lot on how all of this stuff probably worked. That, you know, the woman she held my hand very gently as she rubbed the 5-cent coin. And the fact she told me things like she wrapped it up and tells you to throw it away. Mm. I think it's almost telling your mind, like, that's gone. Like, forget about that. We're one of our, it's more drawing attention to the thing and then casting it
it's
away.
A magic spell.
Yeah, it is. And then she said, look, for, and she did, because it's a good cabin woman. Like, I love how there's such a good past culture of believing in this stuff, but an awareness modern day of, like, it's all a bit wacky, isn't it? So she sat and she went, look, essentially for all intents and purposes, it's my wart now. Right. And that was the thing that struck with me of, like, Jesus, that's, and I think it's someone else thinking it. If you were too, even if I was cynical about the whole spell, the fact that she had some sense of belief and promise, she said, if I don't get it, if it doesn't fall off this time, come back to me in a month and I'll do it again and it will be gone. She said, I have a two and done success rate. She's like, no one else has, you know what I mean?
And
like,
I assume you didn't have to pay her.
No, you're not allowed.
It doesn't work.
You're not allowed. Mm. Wine or biscuits or whatever. But that's a story for a past day. But no, it gives me, I do think there's a tremendous amount of, like, look, if you're going into something looking to, I was only chatting to friends though, you know your man Wim Hof,
I don't know him personally, but
he's a great lad. Yeah, he's been on the pod. No, I'm joking. He does the music with Gareth.
Next.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's the same thing for that of, like, you know, if allegedly, I think it was a journalist from The Guardian went undercover to try and prove him wrong. He's like, I'm going to go to this lad's fucking fake, you know, crack, and I'm going to, and he, within 2 weeks of being there, he was like, I have to change the whole...
I am the ice person.
Yeah, he was like, I have to change the whole article. This work, as in, whatever it is, it excited him, if you get it.
Yeah.
But it's crazy. But then, was your artwork, I have to ask, was it Irish or Celtic in theme before this point? Or was there...
Yeah,
this,
it was yeah, always. Oh, well, it was more like... I did what a lot of artists do, which is get mad into Carl Jung.
Of course.
For better or for worse. So I was mad into the whole idea of the collective unconscious. So that's what I was thinking that I was tapping into. Basically, like, what would you call it? Like, a state of consciousness that is somehow available to anyone and everyone, no matter where they are, whether it's through dreams or visions. And as far as I know, he did think it was, like, an actual, well, not a physical thing, because it's pure consciousness, but like he actually did believe in it as a that you can tap into.
I don't go crazy into believing it, man, but I almost think that collective consciousness is like, you know, blue text as a term like that in a computer, you know, when you go into a computer and it's just, you know, when it's like a screen, you ever log into your computer and it's a black screen and a pile of weird, like, why does this look like
that's the
hacking scene from, to me it is, because it's almost that you get back to this, like, you know, what we are now and how we think is like, you know, the external of a Windows, you know what I mean? You're in Microsoft Paint and you're fecking about, you're in Word. But there's this thing behind that of what keeps the motors running and like generations of evolution. I do, some parts of me, I'm not saying it's concrete, but some part of me think the same way animals, when you look at them, I'm reading a book called Secret Life of Cows at the moment, and the amount of instinctive knowledge animals have in them from, you know, being how to be a cat, having never met another cat. It stands to reason to me that there's some human
equivalent.
There's certain lines that have been dredged through cultures, which is crazy. And I wonder if that's part of the collective consciousness.
And I think, like, the reason Francis Bacon or any, like, lots of people are interested in the idea of the animal, like, you know, we're meant to be so many centuries civilized at this stage, but the animal is still, it is easy for us to snap and be animalistic all of a sudden. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how trained we actually are, how domesticated we actually are. But I was mad into the collective consciousness just for this fact that, like, you know, different cultures would all have really similar myths or similar architecture, even. Yeah,
incredibly correct.
Ones that wouldn't have ever met each other. Now, I don't, it's hard to know, like, to what extent there was trade, but I do think there were cultures that were doing similar things that would never had any contact. So
You're right. Like,
from that point of view, like, there are things that just pop up.
Every culture, have you noticed in, and it's a Jungian thing, you know, the way the archetypes, you know, the gesture archetype. I'm very interested in that one, and the fact that, you know, every culture in Ireland is the hair.
Yeah.
As the, you know what I mean? Is an animal.
The guy that I did the thesis on that I'll talk about in a minute, he was into all this.
And even in Africa, they have something like, I don't know if it's the jackalope, or not the jackalope, but like the coyote then in was the trickster character. Have you ever
read American Gods?
I don't think I have, no.
It's a good book. It's about people.
I know I don't have, by the way. I don't think I have, yeah. No, I'm joking.
Immigrants in the States bringing their gods, and one of them is Anansi from West Africa. He's a spider god.
Wow. He's called
the trickster.
That's wild, like, man.
Actually, a little tangent, but I have a theory that Manannan MacLear is an Irish equivalent of the trickster.
Would you believe so? Because he seems pretty, even from the stories we read of him, he's always, you can't tell if he's going to help you or haunt you.
No, you don't know what he's up to. But I was looking through Lady Gregory's Irish myths. Have you ever gone through them?
We went through a few of them on the pod. I think we went through Lady Gregory's for the fairy cow.
Yeah, they're good. I love the way she writes, because she wrote in a kind of an Irish vernacular. I do have my issues with her as well, because she censored the myths a lot.
She does. She didn't like the, I suppose it was the time in.
Yeah, I don't know if it was her personally or the society she was in, or both. But at the end, the copy I have is like the complete Irish mythology of Lady Gregory. So the first half is the invasions, or the book invasions.
Aye.
And the second half is the Tán.
Oh, sick.
But at the end of the invasions, there's like a load of little chapters that were just, you know, random manuscripts that were never part of any larger book. There's a load of like once-off tales about Manannan.
That's great.
Yeah, he was just like rocking around Ireland with a magic bag and like tricking people.
Jesus, yeah. That sounds great. I love that idea, man.
Now that I've brought it up, I can't remember what was in the bag, but
I think as well. And
you should look into it.
Did you hear when we did the fairy cow episode? We discovered that Manannan, and it's very, you know, the way even Moncal and McGann and people go into the links between Sanskrit culture and our culture, and, you know, whatever. Manannan goes around in, I forget the name of it. Maybe listeners that remember from the, like, it's a boat that's essentially like a wee cup, not a cup, but you know what I mean, like a plate almost, and one oar. Apparently, people go down the Ganges in it, but apparently he rocks up.
Not a Curragh, no.
It's not. That's the thing. No, it had a weird name.
Do you know the Breuter Hoard?
It's
in the National Museum.
Is it that wouldn't it cool? What the little goldy boat?
Yeah. I've seen people think that's supposed to be Manannan's ship, but.
Never know.
It's only speculation.
But yeah, these people had him in one of those weird, it's almost like if you put a plate in the water and he was. But that's very cool to know that Manannan might be a bit of a tricky guy. Well, that's
just something that I've been thinking about recently.
Exactly. And I know we also. He is
a god of water as well, so kind of a bit of a shapeshifter.
Yeah, exactly. Fluid. Speaking of water, or am I skipping too far in the story? Let me know.
All right. I'll continue first. I'll get to
that. Yeah, because I was wondering. Yeah.
It's a bit of a.
I'm glad you knew what I meant. Yeah, go on ahead. We love a meander here. Anyone do junior search geography, remember? No. I can't remember either.
Interlocking spurs.
Yeah, exactly, man. A bit of an oxbow lake going on. Yeah.
Anyway, I came back to Ireland from Toronto, started painting again, and then I did my master's in NCAD in a course called Art in the Contemporary World. And it's basically a course of, it's like art theory, criticism and history all blended into one, and you can kind of do what you want to do yourself.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, delve into the subconscious.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, like, I was more focused on being an art historical writer
than doing
in the master's, but there was an option to make art as well. So, I basically just spent the last 2 years doing that, because I only graduated in July.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Everyone say congrats at home. There we go. I'll give you a second.
Perfect.
But yeah, most of the course was done during lockdown because the first two semesters were normal, and then then in March, then
that's annoyance.
So I spent out of six semesters, four were in my bedroom in Nice.
Wow.
So that's when all this came to the fore, because all of a sudden I was in a room for.
Damn, well, you were in the place between light and dark, man. You
went on an ascetic journey.
Yeah.
Like the Druids.
That's
room
gorgeous.
Came a cave.
You're dead, right? That was your cave.
Yeah.
Theory or whatever they call it.
Mm. So like I was saying, like I was obviously like the whole idea of just Celtic culture in general was always in the background. But I think in the last 2 years I decided, no, like this is now the forefront of the artwork and the writing.
Mm.
And started reading a lot about post-colonialism.
Of course. Like
theories around rebelling against colonialism or...
A colonialist mindset, perhaps.
Like, how do we, as a colonized people...
work backward almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do we awaken? How do we find our feet after being colonized? And obviously it's not... only an Irish thing, it's a worldwide process.
Yeah. Because what I got from you, going ahead, though, actually, sorry.
I think it's important to say, like, you know, usually you think the word post means after, but
yeah,
it's more, post-colonialism refers to anyone who's trying to rebel against colonialism, whether you're still colonized or not.
Fair.
Yeah, like you said, it's a mindset. So anyway, all that was in the background.
Yeah.
And I decided to focus on an artist called Joseph Boyce.
Mm.
And he was a performance artist in the 70s.
Ah.
So he's making art with his own body, mostly. Coincidentally, one of his pieces was to stay in a room for a few days with a wild coyote.
Whoa. Oh, yeah. I think I heard about this, but I didn't even know the person himself. Yeah.
So he was from Germany, but he was from a Celtic area in Germany, near the Dutch border.
Oh.
And, like, keep in mind what I just said about the Surrealists and the Abstract Expressionists. They were very secular, you know?
Yeah.
But the images that were coming up from the unconscious were always, often religious, you know?
You're not wrong, yeah.
Or even someone like Picasso, you know? Like, the bull kept coming up, and that's going way back to Greek myth.
Fair.
So, like, you know, these religious... symbols seem to still be ingrained in our unconscious to some degree. So anyway, Boyce kind of took it a step further, and like he became interested in Druidry, and he traveled to Scotland and Ireland on these kind of almost pilgrimages. You know, he's visiting the Giant's Causeway and Newgrange and all that kind of stuff.
Leprechaun Museum. You know, Grogan's. I'm joking.
Well, Grogan's maybe, because he was a big fan of Brian and James Forsythe, so he might have been reading
Answering
Two Birds and Grogan's. But, you know, he never declared himself a druid or anything. He just was interested in it. And a lot of his artwork was kind of shamanic in the sense, like I just said, you know, spending a few days with a coyote. But like the Celtic...
Was the outcome of that interesting of interest? Is it worth looking at? The artwork?
Yeah, check it out.
Did.
There's not, like, it's more about the...
the experiential element of it. Yeah.
There's no narrative, really. There's no, like, conclusion as such.
Coyotes are rad.
Coyote
Yeah.
But with all that in mind, so you have, like, the Surrealism. You have him in the 70s kind of picking back up Celtic mysticism in some way in his artwork.
Yeah.
And then the post-colonial studies. All that. Oh, yeah, and also... during lockdown, I was going out with someone, and we were on the phone. I'm like, you know the way during lockdown you do these like Skype calls or Zoom, whatever it is,
whatever you want. Yeah, all of them. No sponsor here.
Some sort of social interaction.
Yeah.
And it was like one of these extended calls, and I was like, "Have you ever told you about my drum journeys?" So I whipped out the notebook, and I was reading out some of the visions, and. Yeah, she was kind of like taken aback. She's like, well, that's mad. Like,
yeah.
But I was like, oh, is it? Like, I didn't know it was that.
You don't go on the internet.
No, I'm joking. I wasn't saying that's mad. I think, like, you're weird or anything.
Yeah, it's wild. I didn't know.
She was saying, like, I think she was kind of, like, taken aback by that, like, the intensity of the visions.
That's fair, yeah, that it wasn't like, oh, I got nothing out of that. Like, that it was going places.
Yeah, so that kind of, to be honest, that actually kind of started it, because I was like, geez, maybe I could use this in my artwork now.
Very fair.
As my own method of tapping into the unconscious.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I decided that I would claim myself as a druid.
Dead
that
right.
That seemed like the next logical conclusion.
Yeah, and as we know from 5 Cents and Warts and stuff, you got to commit to such, you know what I mean? You got to believe, you got to logic it, or unlogic it, I suppose, as well, if you're going to make such a leap.
Well, I think a part of my just general thought process is trying to find out what the Celtic philosophers actually taught.
Yeah.
What did they believe? What was their philosophy? And it's probably a futile exercise. It's hard to know.
I'm alone in the sea at night, and it's completely black and quiet. There's a beach nearby. I can feel my pulse, like energy going through me, and the rocking of the waves and the current. Eventually I'm washed up on shore. All the deities are on land above me, watching me. I'm a wolf lying in a mucky puddle on the beach. A wolf pack comes out of a forest nearby, and the Morrigan is one of them, and she revives me. Full of energy then, and we run and we swim in the ocean. We run to the end of a pier, and there's a blue spiraling pool or a portal, and I get a sense of Manannan there. I go inside and I come out in the chamber in Newgrange. Bridget is there as a snake lady. I'm surprised and she laughs. She wraps around me. I get a jolt, and she bites into my neck with 2 fangs, and she laughs. I'm bleeding and I'm scared, but then I realise that it's actually some type of golden honey that's pouring out of me, and trees grow from it and from Newgrange. She gives me a paintbrush or a pen, and I use it to carve or paint spirals on the rocks. Then I'm in the forest with thousands of people and spirits and animals. I'm on a stage and there's lots of singing and drumming. My old self is there and he's decapitated. I pick up the head and the eyes are gone. I swing the head by the hair and throw it into the crowd, and they devour it and they all cheer. The body is stabbed and burnt. After this, I am the druid, and I'm wearing a cloak, and there's a big celebration. All my family and friends and people I will meet in the future. After the party, there's a quiet time in a cave. The Dagda and Carnunos are outside, and I sit inside with the Morrigan. Finally, I'm back in my grove with the deities and animals and trees all around us. Fire comes out of my hands and there's an image of a dragon. And when it's time to go, I say Gerath Mahagwir to them all.
So you were looking for Celtic philosophy in the artwork. is what you're saying.
That is what I was saying.
Yeah.
Before we got our second can of Guinness.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's druids. Druids only. No, Jack. Go on ahead.
Well, I was just thinking that, like, if the druids didn't write anything down, and all the accounts of them come from the Greeks or the Romans or the Christians or whoever,
Rats, yeah. No, I'm joking.
Like, the lads. I do think you can find little snippets of the Druidic philosophy in early Irish Christianity, maybe. Like, I read that one of the reasons why you get the beehive huts in the west of Ireland is because that was just a leftover of the Druids. Like, they would go into these places to be alone for extended periods of time. So it wasn't... It was just a continuation of that in a Christian sense.
And to continue as well, that Stuff You Should Know podcast they went into, they didn't even go heavily enough into it because they were probably right. They said that most people agree that if there was any culture in the world in present day that has held on to what could be the remnants of a Celtic and of a Druidic story, it would be the Irish mythology.
Yeah, you have accounts from the Romans and the Greeks. Who are not always the most trustworthy sources. But yeah, you have the Irish myths, but like, you know, they're being written down by monks in Christian Ireland who maybe were honestly into it or, you know, respected it in some way.
Yeah.
But there's also the chance that they thought that this is just like a barbaric... Like, you know, the Irish myths are very violent and sexual, but I think that they've already been censored to a point.
Do you know, when we speak on the different, the Greeks having them and stuff, I have two quotes that I brought out since I knew we were discussing the Elk. I just said I'd bring up now. So apparently, ancient geographer Strabo, I think it's Strabo you say it is it? He reported that the important of a sacred grove meeting place of the Galatian Celts of Asia Minor was filled with oak trees.
Yeah. So the myths are kind of a bit of a problem as well because, you know, they're written down by Christian monks. But
bastards. Bald headed.
I didn't say
it. No, I'm joking.
Another problem is that it's an oral tradition. So like when you have hundreds... Yeah. Maybe thousands of storytellers knocking around the country. There's no, like, there is a version of a story, but like everyone puts their own spin on it. But now all of a sudden you have one written down account of the Tán. That's a problem as well.
That was probably why they rejected writing things down, isn't it? Is because it rejects the multitudes that are in the singular, you know what I mean? Like, as in the tales.
All sorts of things, like, could get really mystical. It could be the spoken word is supposed to be sacred.
Do you know what I brought up? Because you know when we said that this concept of the subconscious has been around for years and years, thousands of years, but obviously
we've it wasn't always called the subconscious. It was called like the divine
exactly,
or the gods. You know,
when we started out, we did a pile of research before we set foot on the podcast, and there was one book, I forget his name now, we used to come back to him a lot more, but I think his second name is O'Byrne or O'Hara, I can't remember, but he's an Irish writer, folklorist writer, and he brings up how the Irish believed that poets and that people of a poetic mind had that, you know, we literally call it a stream of thought and a stream of, you know, out of your mouth.
Some more water.
Words, how they conceived of it was that words flowed like water from the head to the mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And that when you were speaking, you're a purist. It wasn't, but there was no, that was what it was. It was this sort of, that apparently they claimed that poets, the filly had a third, because obviously they didn't, you know, their concept in anatomy was kind of fucked. they had a third vein or an extra vein that no one else had, and it opened up. It's exactly when they would
straight
speak.
The bridge and loo.
Exactly, but interesting.
They were a sect of the Druids, as far as I know.
The
lower tier of the Druidic class.
You think so? The poet's side, the written word.
Yeah, I was actually reading the other day.
Or a spoken word.
That, like, because of the church in Ireland, the Druids had to disband for obvious reasons. But the Filí were allowed to continue, and they actually continued the Druidic tradition through their sacred poetry.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, don't know how true that is now, but...
I think it would stand to reason.
I read it, so it's true.
it has to be true.
I think it is true. But just as a side note as well, like you can look into like what did the Greeks and Romans actually say.
Yeah.
And like when they weren't saying that we're a bunch of inferior barbarians, they were respectful of the Celts sometimes.
It was almost a romantic idea, the same way as we do with the... Apparently, the settlers in America had this romantic vision, as you can see, of the Native Americans.
Yeah, yeah.
That they liked the idea of them in the past tense. You know what I mean? Oh, they were a great and proud, you know, and connected to the earth, but they not fit for modern times. Yeah. That kind of thing.
If you're interested in that, there's one book that basically spells it all out in one go, and that's Orientalism by Edward Said.
Mm.
He's a Palestinian writer. He talks about how the West views the East.
Interesting.
And yeah, a part of Orientalization is that you see another culture as inferior, but you also are attracted to it.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So that's kind of what's happened with the Romans and the Celts to a certain degree. But yeah, like there's Greek accounts saying that the Druids were similar to the Persian Magi.
Ah.
The magicians of Persia.
Yup.
Or the Hindu gymnophists, I think they're called.
Damn.
Who are also like a spiritual class. Hinduism. Seemingly are big into asceticism as well. So like extended periods of fasting. So you can kind of look into like, you can kind of like maybe figure out what the Druids were up to by studying other spiritual traditions, because more than likely they were.
You cross-reference them, yeah. Would you, this might be a bit of a side note, but when we're speaking on the Greeks and the Romans and their connection, I visited your exhibition in the complex very recently, and the title of it is Vivictus?
Vivictus.
I loved the little story. You had a sheet round, and I wasn't aware, and how historically accurate is that the Celts more or less took Rome.
Yeah,
go into this.
390 BC.
Yeah, 390 BC.
This all went down.
Yeah, who's it? We took the Sam Maguire from the Romans.
That's where the Ardagh Chalice actually came
from. I'm taking this with me. But yeah, going ahead.
Yeah, 390 BC in and around. A group of Italian Celts.
Wow.
Took over Rome. Now, this is before Rome was the great empire that it would become.
Ah, right.
It was in its early days of being a city. Yeah. And a bunch of Celts.
Not as many hotels back
no,
then.
No, no. There's no Hiltons.
No, not yet.
A bunch of Celts from northern Italy were like, well, there's a lot of gold in there, so we like gold. Let's go do what we do best. And they sacked the city. They took it over. Seemingly for a good few months, actually.
God damn.
Depends who you believe. Like, if you look, there's paintings from different French painters, like in the 17th and 18th century, of it, and they kind of make it out that like the Celts were like murdering and raping people left, right, and center, which could be true or could be anti-Celtic propaganda. Hard to tell.
But the funny thing is, every warring, it's not to diminish that in any regard, but not to. When World War II happened and the occupation of Japan post-World War II, and that's very modern comparatively, they had to legalize prostitution in Japan because American soldiers were molesting so many people, which is crazy. So it's every like, war, it seems to go on.
It's a really...
It's an awful thing.
It's a difficult
thing,
one like, with the whole Celtic thing to like... I think you have to remember that we're not angels.
That's fair.
Like the Celts. This was, we've done a lot of fucked up shit as well.
You're dead right, that's the thing. And you, as you said, this is nothing to do with those other things, but we mentioned the gold. You had a great little segment on your story talking about how the Celts were vain.
Oh, yeah. Well,
like, or at least a little bit vain. Oh, they had their version of being vain, you know.
Yeah, but like...
Their fashion.
What's wrong with that?
Exactly, I enjoyed
Christians made that into a sin.
Yeah, exactly. It's very exciting.
Yeah, but they're big into their image in general. Gold, hairstyles, clothes, a lot of bravado. Being a colourful.
You can
person.
See that in the stories, even of a Cuchulainn and things. So there's one story I read of Conall Cairneach, who's my personal favourite Irish mythological man, and Cuchulainn and another lad who was just like the placeholder. You know what I mean? Like the guy that isn't going to do as well as the other two. Mm. And it was all about who can lift the hut that they're in. You know what I mean? It was just the most like lad thing. But yeah, I wanted to get back to the quote. Yeah, how did it get to the title? Yeah, of
basically
the
after a few months of holding the city and possibly killing all the people, etc. The Celts said, "Right, we'll leave if you give us £1,000 of gold."
Amazing.
So the Romans said, "Fair enough," and the Celts brought out their big scales to weigh up the gold, and The chieftain of the Celts was called Brennus.
Great.
Brennus. Brian of Italy, I suppose. He was in charge of the whole deal, and the Romans were putting the gold on the scales, and all of a sudden, one of the lords said, this is a complete cod. He's a cod in us.
Yeah.
Because they reckoned that the scales was tampered with, so that it was actually making them pay more than £1,000.
Oh.
They thought it was like a con man scales, yeah. Which is possibly also true.
Yeah, yeah, you'd never know, yeah.
We're good at the old conning as well.
Yeah. He's like, so, we're just not, they purposely built a very shoddy set of scales.
So, what Brennus did is took his sword and threw it on the other side of the scales to make it even heavier, so the Romans have to pay even more gold.
Ah.
And he said, "Vae victis," which is Latin, and it means "woe to the vanquished."
Amazing.
But it basically means like you've lost, so pay up.
I have a general question for you then. When you titled your exhibit "Vae victis," is that to the colonialists, or is that to ourselves?
Both.
I think so, yeah.
Well, it started like, you know, woe to the vanquished, as in like Celtic culture has been vanquished.
Yeah, like romantic Ireland's dead and gone.
Yeah, but when you start really thinking about it, then you realise that, like, I was reading about that, like, that incident could have changed the course of history if they hadn't decided to leave with gold.
Yeah, like right. We're staying
here. They could have just burnt Rome to the ground, and that would have completely altered the course of European history. And also, the Celts sacked Delphi in Greece as well, which was a sacred site. And they did the same thing. Like, they just destroyed the place, took all the gold. Like, if someone did that to us, we would say, like,
what bastards?
That was our sacred. Like, imagine someone destroyed Newgrange and took everything. Like, you know,
I'm glad you're putting it into context. So,
I think when you, and you know, like, there's a reason why the Celts or the Greeks and the Romans weren't really fond of the Celts.
So you're saying we deserve the black and tans, Ronan? Is what
you're saying. Yeah, I'm actually a British imperialist. Apologies.
Did you want to know a fun fact of the day? I was told the start of this week, Cara Delevingne's great grandfather set up the black and tans.
Who's that?
If she's you'd know her to see. She's a model with big thick eyebrows. You'd know her to
big
see.
Thick eyebrows.
And she started acting in movies recently. She acted in Paper Towns, and she was in Suicide Squad, the first one, the terrible one.
But less that. I like that double meaning nature of the title.
Oh yeah, yes. I was actually saying earlier that, like, apart from all the historical things, one way to find out what the Druids actually taught is through Celtic artwork.
Fair.
I have a pet peeve of it being called decorative art, because it wasn't just for decoration. You know, you have all the knotwork, all the spirals, they all had meanings.
It's Latin style, is it? Is that what it's called?
Well, there's a lot of different styles, but Latin is one. That's the one that was the first one that took off in Ireland.
Fair.
But one of the things that's noted a lot by people who study Celtic art is that nothing's ever solid. So I read a good quote that said, you know, in Greek art, a face is a face.
Mm.
But in Celtic art, a face can become a bird or I don't know, you could say that one aspect of Celtic philosophy might be that the double meaning, you know, the contradiction is allowed to stay. Whereas in Western Enlightenment thought, you know, things tend to be in and of themselves.
Yeah.
But in Celtic art, you can have.
And I like that you went into your writing that you had accompanying your thing, stated that, like, I've listened to your man, Billy McGlynn, the folklorist. He brought up, even on his chat with Blind Boy, that his opinion was, look, the early Irish, the Celts, they didn't have much in the lines of, they did have visual art, but once again, he was kind of, there is a general sort of thinking, it seems, that disregards the visual of the Celts, and you even brought it up in your thing, but you kind of oppose that.
I completely disagree with that. I think
it's been overlooked.
I'll tell you why I think that is.
Please.
Why I think that is, well, first of all, you just have anti-Celtic rhetoric in general saying that their art is a bit shit, like, right, it's not as good as Roman art. Like, well, that no one specifically is saying that. You know, it's a bias that is just perpetuated over hundreds of years. You know, it's no one ever came out and said Celtic art shit. Like, but then in terms of like the 20th century in Ireland, with the Celtic revival, painting or fine art was associated with the ruling classes. Whereas literature, like poetry and writing, weren't as much.
So I get where you're going.
I think we really took on the idea of us as a country of the word.
Yeah.
You know. Well, we are. It's not untrue. And like, you know, the GA was set up and traditional music had a revival. So you have
Stop the faction fighting. How dare you?
Well, yeah. You know, you have poetry, you have sport, you have music, you know, of all these things which are, well, maybe not literature is seen as the, yeah, it's not really seen for the common person so much as sport and traditional music, but it's still,
we've always held that like on our coast. Yeah,
know Yeats and Joyce to some degree.
Yeah, know that they're good. Yeah.
They all know that they exist at least. Yeah. I hope.
I think we probably don't tap into that as much as we should. We kind of hold, it's kind of like that thing we brag about but don't maybe know, you know, don't flesh out. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, totally.
But that's just cultural stuff, you know?
Yeah. But I think that's the Celtic revival was never strong visually because of that, I think. Another reason relating to the oak tree, by the way, is that like...
Sorry.
Little teaser. Well, like Celtic art is abstract, usually.
Yeah.
So like there aren't, you can't... I've tried and there's no images of the Morrigan.
Yeah, really? There's none, yeah.
Well, like there might be. There's a few that might be her, but...
That's the thing. And or then, like,
you know, whereas in Greek and Roman art, you can find an image of Athena or Dionysus. The way that we approached art making was that, you know, it's pointless to try and portray a deity.
And there's a certain element of it's not, if this isn't poo-pooing the cultures that did draw their, whatever, their gods, their etc. But there is an argument to be made where, I often find the things that are so superfluous and important in our culture, we don't think in the moment to record because they're that superfluous. We don't consider the need to record something we see as, well, it's, you know, it's the Morrigan. It's the, you know what I mean? Like, as in,
yeah.
I find it of, I was trying to look back into the National Folklore Collection's urban folklore thing, and I found so much of what they were talking about in the urban folklore collection. This was in the 1970s. It was like, this isn't what we want. You know what I mean? It's impossible to know what the future wants to hear or the past. But they were going into the factory line and how the bottle-making factory worked. And they were like, oh, we do. And then at one point, that woman asked the guy, he was like, and what songs do you sing? And he went on and described, oh, we sing great songs and you'd only hear them here. And he didn't say one word of what the songs were.
Mm-hmm.
But then he started to talk about it again. So yeah, we make the bottles by, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And going into the 21st century where mass production, you know, is very much here and we don't need to learn more about it.
Yeah.
But naturally it was the new novel thing. And he's like, this is what they want to hear about. They don't want to hear about these songs.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I think it's the exact same thing of, you know, it's very hard in the moment. And as you said they're quite abstract. Once again, it kind of took us learning what abstract is of like, one man's abstract is another man's childish drawing, as in, you know what I mean? In a good, as in, of someone, as you know, some might look at a Roman or a whatever thing and say, oh yeah, this is high art, so we're going to, you know, regard this. And then they look at this and they go, ah, oh, they're not thinking enough. Whereas the not thinking might have been the, I'm not,
well,
saying not thinking.
Ironically,
you know what I mean?
Abstraction has
taken over the form, yeah,
in some way, yeah. So.
Who's laughing now?
The Celtic triumph.
Yeah, but
you always come back to the spiral.
I'm going to say it now, and I'd love to talk to you about it. Ronan, one of the big striking images I saw of yourself, or should I say Ronan, was the Druid baptism, actually, is how you titled it. You had a rebaptism on Bealtaine.
Yeah.
Or an undoing of an original baptism.
Well, I saw it as a six-month process, so it started at Samhain.
Sick.
Which is coming up soon, so, coincidentally. Yep. But, yeah, I thought, well, look, I'll prepare for 6 months. Don't ask me why I didn't actually do anything. It was mental preparation.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just continuing all the stuff you were talking about. I was painting a series of watercolors of druids in the mythology.
Yeah.
And yeah, I decided, well, it's Samhain now. Samhain is the start of the Celtic year.
Yeah.
And then that would mean Beltane would be the halfway point in a way.
Yeah.
So I said, well, if I make the intention now at Samhain that come Beltane, I'll declare myself a druid. It was a way to ease into it, you know. But I also
told the power of utterance, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But I also told people, so I suppose it kind of had to happen because you can't really pull out of that.
Yeah, I'm going to be, you're not wrong, man. I'm going to be a druid. They're like, whatever happens to that? Yeah.
That was just phase, man.
Yeah, yeah. It's like buying a guitar or a drum kit or something.
Remember that druid phase?
You were a druid, yeah. So you had it set in the mind and you...
Yeah, I had it in mind and like... I said it... Well then, that was all before COVID, like...
Damn.
So then all of a sudden COVID kicked in and then I was at home. So I would have loved to have done like a big party, you know, with friends...
But were you saying to me, I want to get the time scale right? Had you been on a phone?
It was actually really nice.
Really, yeah?
Well, it was just with my immediate family.
Well, then that's very nice, yeah.
Which was actually nice. And like.
Probably had very communion vibes again.
Well, I was actually going to say that. Like, in the same way that like Christianity uses paganism a lot, I think there's no way to escape Christianity now in like in a neo.
I was going to ask,
it was very, it had a lot of Christian symbolism, let's say, although
I think you were doing, man, that's what I wanted to ask, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but, so we talk a lot on the podcast about syncretism and the act of, the best way to take up a culture isn't to stamp it out, it's to take the practices of the culture and infuse it with the incoming, same as how a parasite does something, or whatever, it's like, to cut, you know what I mean? Yeah, whatever, yeah. I was saying, bridge it into, did you do a little bit in a good way of, one, is it an intentional tongue-in-cheek oxymoron? Yeah. Bealtaine baptism, and were you aware that maybe there's a certain syncretism or reverse syncretism to taking the iconography of the Catholic baptism, Christian baptism, whatever you are, and working it backwards to, you know, kind of using the weapon and the enemy on yeah,
counter colonization,
exactly.
Yeah, well, you were mentioning the trickster earlier.
Yeah,
and. Like, for me, becoming a druid is almost... Like, I'm still the same person, but my personality has changed slightly, I think. And one aspect of becoming a druid is to become the trickster. Like, a Celtic trickster.
So. Yeah.
So, like, there's a lot of little things that, well, I find funny, but they're not, like, explicitly... It's not, like, a comedic...
Not ha-ha funny,
no,
but yeah.
No,
yeah.
Like, there's a lot of things like that. So, and a lot of it's just off the cuff as well. It's purposely kind of awkward... Because one of the things that really upsets me is that I can't ever really know what our druid ancestors were up to. A lot of it's kind of awkward. But I think I just have to incorporate that.
You're dead right. You're drawing... I think the best thing to do is not to pretend that you're tapping into some druid book that you found. I think the fact... And your exhibit was very... aware of it, and obviously yourself are, and even in what you've done so far, shining a light on, look, these are, you know, this is the colonizing that has happened to Ireland. You know what I mean? You're very aware of it, and I think that gives it almost an authenticity that it wouldn't have if you did a bit of, you know, you could verge on romanticism otherwise. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, have you ever seen the English druids who all wear the white cloaks on Stonehenge?
No, but I can see what you mean. If that, it, that kind of Disney world's it, if you get me. No offense to them.
If there are any English druids watching.
Yeah, yeah, imagine.
Well, like, I'm sure they are sincere, or a lot of them are.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, we were just... It was, you know, in lockdown, you know, you do these little walks or whatever.
It's pure walking nowhere.
Yeah. So we went on a walk to Glendalough.
Gorgeous.
Which is a Christian side of pilgrimage. St. Kevin and the
the monks were all doing whatever they were doing.
Doing whatever they wanted.
Maybe doing druidic stuff there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. We were just walking up the stream with my family, and all. I think we were just messing. We were like, "Oh, there's some nice holy water," and I was like, "I had a bottle with me," and I was like, "That is actually some nice holy water." So we just out of the blue, we just collected it, and I was like, "What? This is like 2 weeks before Bealtaine." I was like, well, there you go. That can be our baptismal water.
Amazing. How were your parents during all of this? How did they receive all this crack?
Well, like up until it happened, like they were always making a big. They were kind of slagging me about it, you know. They were like, "Oh, do we really have to do this?" And all. And, like,
that's good. At least you teased it for them.
Oh
yeah.
God, here he goes again. But and there was like a few jokes. Like I was saying stuff like, "But like you made me do my baptism without my permission, so you're giving me a new baptism and you don't have a choice."
Yeah, exactly. You're going. Yeah, you're right. Hell or I won't.
You didn't give me a choice when I was whatever, a few months old. But no, when we actually did it, they were mad into it.
That's
I think they enjoyed it more than I did.
I'd say because so. They got to pour semi, water on your head.
It's semi-normal for me at this stage, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas it's not. It's kind of a novelty for them.
Yeah, that's cute. Yeah. But, and the fact that you're into something, I think parents, even with me doing this, are like, I think they'd prefer you this doing this than having no. Is that am I overstepping to say that to have no faith at all, or you know what I mean? I'm not saying this is your faith, but I think my parents like the idea of me not just purely going science, isn't it? Yeah. It's the only way.
Richard but, Dawkins.
Yeah, Richard. Yeah, that's what I think of. Mom. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know.
But at least
really,
they had a good.
They're fairly chill, to be honest.
So that's probably half.
Yeah, no, it was purposely using the whole idea of the Christian baptism. And it felt like going to my communion, you know, having the party.
And the pictures but are like, great. Like,
The whole thing is, like, all you think baptism, the whole idea of the sacred water, like, that goes back thousands of years before Christianity was even conceived.
I'd say
so,
it was co-opted.
So I don't even see it as taking a Christian thing, or I think it was their way beforehand.
It's just taking, yeah, a symbolic thing.
Yeah. So I have a video of it actually. I've only shared the pictures online. I think I might share the video sometime.
Yeah.
But basically,
probably a good rewind, maybe on the anniversary of it or something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But they like physically baptized me with this Glendalough water. Like, you know, they poured it on my forehead.
Damn.
So that was.
Did it feel good?
It did, yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
It was nice. And I read out the poem that Amargin read when he arrived in Ireland.
Oh,
you know,
sick
that
one. Yeah. I am the wave.
Yeah, yeah. There's my favourite line is, "I'm a flash from the sun."
Ah, that's gorgeous. That's beautiful.
Yeah, so that was. I forgot to mention that the whole part of becoming a druid as well was changing my name back to the Irish version.
Yes.
Or say back to the Irish version. I was never actually
I get what you mean, but yeah.
It's some form of a post-colonial act as well. And all
doesn't that show the oxymoron in it, man, that it's simultaneously going back and going forward? And
well, like, I'm saying back, but like I was always Ronan O'Reilly.
But it's funny, you were always Ronan O'Reilly, but Ronan O'Reilly would have been never happened if it wasn't for the existence of the names Ronan and O'Reilly. But then it's this weird thing where it's new for you, but it's also old for us as a people, culturally, and it's bizarre. Yeah.
But I really like it just on a personal level, because my grandfather was called Larry Riley with no O. Hard to know, but he was going around calling himself Riley, and then my grandmother said to him, "Put the O back on." So she actually made him. So all of a sudden, then he said, "All right, I'm Larry O'Reilly." So my dad's family are all O, and then now I've gone O'Reilly. So it's been a little process.
That's gorgeous. And like the O'Reilly himself. So that went well, and I assume, did you have a nice big dinner or something after the baptism?
Oh, we had whiskey and honey.
That's great. Was that planned? It felt right.
Yeah, no,
we had
that beforehand.
Ah.
That was a... They're both nice. You know, you have Ishka Baha, you know, the water of life.
This sounded lovely, man. I wish I was invited.
Yeah, it was crack,
No, we'll all have to
do it. Well, you can just do your own.
I'll have to do my own, the big session.
But that's gorgeous.
Anyway, yeah, that was the druidic ceremony.
Well, that's us, and that's how you are. That's how you're a druid now, and you make art as a druid in that way. And I like, as we say, but I think once again, as we said, you know, it takes the wind out of its sails to say, I think you do have a good nature about you, about how much, you know, I'm trying to step around my words here, like how much you are a druid and how much you're, you know, not, you know, you're not swinging your druid member around at me, you know what I mean? Saying like, Luke, refer to me as the druid, but no, as
not
in,
a bad idea.
Yeah, but then you don't also, you don't want to, as you say, you don't want to go the other way of like, oh, I'm just a, you know what I mean? It would take the wind out of it if you were just like, because you know.
Or I'd like to think that the Celtic logical fallacies there. So half the time I'm like, this is a bit weird. And then half the time I'm like, no, this is real.
That's what I mean. There we go. I didn't know. I wanted you to say it.
They're both simultaneous, actually.
I was going to
talk about the oak tree, do you?
I do. I'd love to talk the oak tree. Would it be too much of a... Is there anything that could tie us into the oak of... When we first met, man, you talked to me about your tattoo. And I'd be interested in mentioning that too. The cauldron, is that of any relevance? Or that's a trickster looking character,
which
man.
One?
The one we spoke about him, you'll know the name. It's on a cauldron, is it?
Yeah. His name is Carnunos, which means the horned one, which is actually not the best name for him because he has antlers rather than horns.
It's weird how humanoid he is. That's the big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so there are many images of him from the all around Gaul, which was the region of France, which was Celtic, which had a Roman influence. So that's why all of a sudden they started making their gods and goddesses in human form.
Ah.
But there's a specific image of him from Denmark. It's a cauldron called the Gundestrup cauldron. It's completely made of silver. And it has all these mystical figures all over it, and it's hard to know who's who in it.
Well, it's amazingly though, between the horns and the snake, it's once more or less again as we've discussed, and I've seen you post about you know, the things that fall off of an animal. You know what I mean, like the skin, the shedding of the skin, and the
So like he's sitting cross-legged in what you think is a kind of meditation pose. So I kind of believe that the druids were meditating. But yeah, he has antlers, and he's also holding a snake which has a ram's horns. So like snakes shed their skin and deer shed their antlers every year, so he is definitely some sort of regenerational character.
But
the interesting thing is that the snake has ram's horns, so the thing about horns is that they don't shed.
That is very odd. Why do you think that is?
I think that he is sort of like...
There are things that remain. Is that
Yeah, he's like the deciduous tree and the evergreen tree at the same time. Going back to this fallacy, you know, two things can coexist which shouldn't coexist. You know, he is regenerated.
Two things that shouldn't exist that defy the shouldn't by their mutual existence. I had a lovely chat, as lovely as it was interesting, with Ronan, and I thought it important to share the whole conversation about where he comes from and how he thinks. Before we jump into our chat on the oak, I thought it equally as interesting as some sort of subject-based episode, so I hope you enjoy it. It's something a little bit different than what maybe you're used to from us, but I think Ronan exhibits a great mix of, you know, common sense, but also wonder and creativity. Something that I think we need to get a better balance of in modern-day life just to survive it, you know? It wasn't just on pure logic that... we got this far, and maybe we all have to find our inner grove. I know I will. I'll be hanging out with who knows, probably be a platter of biscuits, but join us next week it'll be the week after, actually, when we discuss the oak with our beautiful guest Ronan O'Rahlig. Thanks again, and stay safe. I don't know what you're staying safe from. Ooh. Ooh. Thank you for the music, as always, by the wonderful Gareth Quinn Redmond. And thank you for the lovely illustrative work by Aisling Larkin Designs. And Pishrogues is a podcast coming straight from the hearts of Luke Conroy and Aaron Reedy, no matter where they are in the world.